I wish our relief would get here, Six-Finger.
I know what you mean, Three-Feather.
Both were guarding the hut on the Ville's outskirts. He was a normal human, short like almost all the Chichimecs, and pot-bellied.
I haven't eaten all day.
That's all you think about, stuffing your gut.
At least we have enough to eat for a while.
If you keep eating like you do, it's going to slow you down. Then it's you for the pot.
I keep up. I ran back here as fast as you did today. Besides, if you aren't hungry, why are you so eager to be off?
Three-Feather bobbed his head in the direction of the plaza, from which screams and applause continued to rise into the cloudless night sky.
I want to watch. Those bastards hurt us today, killed many of my friends. I want to see them get what's coming.
Something splashed against the side of Three-Finger's face.
Did you spit on me, Six-Finger?
His companion had collapsed on the packed dirt in front of the hut. Dark fluid was gushing from the side of his head. A bloody, thin tongue of steel suddenly emerged from the sentry's mouth.
Blazes!
Doc had his boot on the neck of the fallen mutie and was trying to unstick his sword from the dead sentry's head.
It is wedged!
Hurry it up, Doc. It was your bright idea to poke him through the head bone.
Well, you must admit it dispatched him quickly and of paramount importance silently. There.
The blade came free. Doc flourished it triumphantly in the air. They dragged the dead sentries around to the back of the hut and left them by a pile of debris. Better that passersby see no sentries at all than stiffs on the doorstep. The door had no visible lock. With both men standing clear, Ryan pushed at it gingerly. It opened with a groan of rusted hinges that sounded horribly loud and made his heart jump into his throat. Again, no outcries of discovery. Doc took out his flashlight and shone it inside. A man sat in the midst of the bare floor, with his knees up and his head between them. His heavy black hair was shot with gray. He raised his head and glared at them defiantly. Then, as his eyes, accustomed to the dark, made out their vague figures past the dazzle, his look changed to one of surprise.
You're foreigners!
You the Holy Child's uncle?
The man had gotten to his feet slowly, as if his joints pained him. Ryan guessed he'd been sitting on the floor for many hours. His seamed Badland face was impassive, but Ryan guessed he was going through a fierce internal debate.
I am. I am he called Raven. Have you come to kill me?
No. You're free to walk out of here, but we need to talk. There's some things you ought to know, but first we need to get out of here before somebody comes along. Will you come with us and hear us out?
I can do that much.
The three left the hut, moved out of the Ville with more concern for speed than stealth, to a brushy lava outcrop from behind which they could keep an eye on pursuit. Unsure of the Chichimec, Ryan had no intention of leading him to their concealed wag, or even betraying its existence. Quickly, he recounted the conversation he had overheard between Howling Wolf and Felicidad Mendoza. Raven squatted, listened without emotion.
So, there has been a battle. I've been imprisoned for several days. What of my nephew?
Ryan looked at Doc, who shrugged.
He was injured. Not badly, they say. He'll recover. I shot him. It was the only way to save myself and my friends from your army.
For a moment, Raven stared at him with eyes that glittered like glass in the starlight.
In hard times, a man does what he must. It is the way of this world. If my sister's son lives, I bear you no ill will. But what do you want from me?
First, tell me how you got wrapped up in this.
The man, Nezahualcoyotl, came up from the south, speaking to us of destiny. He called my sister's son a great gift of the gods, and claimed that the gods had guided him, Howling Wolf, to us to show us how to use that great gift. Times had turned bad. The death winds were blowing ever farther south, and the rains that stripped the meat from a man's bones. Game grew scarce. Our shadows dwindled with each sun. We should not have listened to him. I should not have listened to him. But his words were honey to our ears. I, in particular, was touched by destiny, he told me, for I was always the one closest to the boy. In turn, I was the one the boy listened to, although in time he began to heed Howling Wolf as well. My heart began to turn bad almost from the start. All the torture, the eating of human flesh. If an enemy does you great hurt, you give him a hard time before he dies. That's the way of the world, too. but Howling Wolf has a great hunger for human pain, which he has passed on to the others. All to please the gods, he preaches. But I think it is mostly what pleases him.
And speaking of which, if we wish to avail our friends, we'd best act with expedition.
Right. Will you help us, Raven?
You mean no further harm to my sister's son?
Not unless that's the only way to stop the invasion.
Removing Nezahualcoyotl will stop the invasion.
That's what I reckon.
You will slay the false priest, Howling Wolf?
That's the general plan.
You will not try to destroy my people?
How many fucking quests? Look, I don't care about your people one way or another, as long as they leave my friends and me alone. We're probably going to have to chill a few to free our pals and put Howling Wolf on ice for keeps, though.
I will help you as best I can.
Then all that remains to us is to determine how.
How you holding up, Jack? Alive. Till dead. Not crawl for the bastards.
That's the spirit. Spit in the bastards' eyes when they come for you.
JB shook his head. His face, like Jack's, was crusted over with blood. His left eye was swollen almost shut. Improbably, his spectacles had survived, and one of their captors had placed them carefully back on JB's face when the two were lashed to the poles.
And here they come.
A group led by capering, blood-soaked figures started across the naked earth toward them.
Always intended, when it came time for me to chill, to show whoever did me just how much guts I had. But I gotta admit, I never meant it quite so literal.
From right behind them, headlights came on, striking the pair with an almost physical impact.
I thought that you intended to create a diversion.
Ryan drove straight into the ville from the north, lights out, at a slow pace for a wag, but faster than a man could walk.
Circumstances changed, so the plan changed. This'll be pretty diverting, though.
Was it truly necessary to throw stealth out with the bathwater?
Time's blood, Doc. It's running out fast for our friends here. And who knows how fast for Christy and Mildred back in the city.
Doc rode in back. Raven was up front where Ryan could keep an eye on him. The Chichimec cradled the weapon the feathered Muti guard had carried, a nice lever-action Marlin 94 and 30-30, complete with a box and a half of cartridges for reloads. Mostly, he seemed to be trying to maintain his stoic front and hide the fact he was as delighted as a kid at riding in the wag, no doubt for the first time in his life. Doc had the other guard's weapon, a 20-gauge Winchester Defender pump shotgun. Between Ryan and Raven rode the Mini-14 off the sentry he chilled at Nezahualcoyotl's hut. The two had their hand blasters in reserve as well. Yet again, no one paid the least attention as they rolled right up toward the plaza. They could see their friends clearly. Beyond them, the games were suspended. A dozen or so Chichimecs were approaching JB and Jack, even now. Their turn was imminent.
We should have guessed Don Hector was never serious about fighting these crazies. Their security's so bad he could have wiped them out any time he felt like it.
Which is the very fate he intends, according to that remarkably wicked young woman. To make himself fully the conquering hero once he has no further use for these poor deluded fools.
Well, we'll just have to piss on his parade.
He rolled the Hummer to the edge of the plaza, barely 15 feet behind the stakes to which his friends were tied. He switched on the lights. The group making for the captive pair stopped, their faces frozen in comic parodies of surprise. Ryan got out and clambered up on the wag's hood, then helped Raven up and onto the roof. He then raised the Mini-14 above his head and fired off three quick rounds. The short-barreled long blaster got the undivided attention of the several hundred blood-drunk celebrants. Everybody stared. Nobody moved.